Welcome along to the Property Academy podcast. I'm your host, Edward Knight.
And I'm Andrew Knuckle.
And today on the show, we're talking about how big can I grow my portfolio? Now, some of you, I was going to say eagle-eyed listeners, but that's probably not very good since you're listening. I should say
owl-eared.
Owl-eared. No, it's going to start with an E. Edward Ed.
I don't know. No, but don't they have to have good hearing? Do owls have good hearing?
Who knows? Who knows? For any of you, what hair's good? Elephant eared.
They're just because they've got big ears doesn't mean that they're good listeners.
Well, let's just pretend. They never forget anything. So for any of you elephant eared listeners out there who have been listening closely, you would have heard in the DTI episode, debt to income episode we did recently, we talked about some Reserve Bank modelling about how many properties you could potentially purchase both before and after DTIs. Now, a number of you have had your ears prick up and ask us specifically to go into more detail about that modelling, the idea being that you could then get a sense of how big a portfolio you could grow over time. So we've dug into that modelling and we're going to take you through right now. So if I own my own home right now, Andrew, but I don't own any investment properties, how many might I be able to buy over the next 10 years according to this modelling?
So over the next 5 years, based on their modelling, you could buy 3 rental properties, maybe a fourth one. And at the 10-year mark, you could buy a fifth and maybe a sixth. Now, when that switches to debt-to-income ratios, over the first 5 years, you can get 2 rental properties. And over the 10-year mark, you can have a third rental property.
Now, what's interesting here is that even with all of the restrictions, if we think about if debt-to-income ratios didn't come in at all, or you decided to invest in properties that were exempt from those debt-to-income ratios, like new builds, for instance, 6 properties is a lot of properties to purchase over a 10-year period. And we'll go through the assumptions in a minute, but were you surprised by that number?
Well, that's probably more than a lot of investors that we work with would actually be looking for.
But the other thing that was quite interesting from the modelling that we looked at was that it wasn't a straight line. It was a relatively quick increase and then a levelling off. Now, what I mean by that is that you might be able to buy a couple straight away, but then you've got to wait for rents to increase or your own income to increase before you can continue purchasing. But I think what that shows is sometimes people, and I'd put myself in this category, who are earlier on in their investment journey, you sometimes look at somebody like Andrew or somebody who owns a lot of properties and think, how the hell did they buy that many properties? Now, of course, some of it is houses were cheaper. Some of it was the fact that lending restrictions weren't as bad. But what's really important that you've got to remember is time.
Yeah.
You know, somebody like Andrew, despite being quite young, still in his 30s, has been investing for 19 years. Did I get that right? I don't think it's 19. I say 19 all the time.
No, I know.
It's
18. You actually make it, I know. You say that and then it gets me confused about my own age. But yeah, it's been 18 years.
18 years. So of course it grows over time. Now, you're probably wondering, well, what are these based on? Is this based on somebody who is similar to me? Now, I'm going to tell you all of the assumptions that this Reserve Bank modelling is based on. But what's important to note is, of course, this scenario is not going to apply to anybody listening to this show because you're all going to be different. There's probably not one person listening who's going to have the exact numbers I'm about to read out. But I think what's important to do as you're listening to these assumptions is adapt for your situation. So for instance, the household income they've used in this scenario is actually quite high. They've said 200K. So that would be both partners earning 100K each. Now, some people listening to the show are not going to be anywhere near that. Some people are going to be well above that. So that helps you to adapt your situation. Do you know what we really should do? If we were smart people, we would try and reverse engineer their model, and it actually wouldn't be that hard. Mm. And then people could put in their own situation, their own level of household income.
Ed, like with most of his promises to me, this will be one that never actually eventuates. So in a few months' time, text him on 5522 and harass him for it. He might actually do it. Then he'll groan that he actually has to do the job that he said he's going to do and make it your fault for asking.
Well, that does sound like something I would do. Well, actually, I always think I'll do stuff if enough people want it. If you think that we should try and reverse engineer this and create a little tool on our website where you can put in your level of household income and it gives you an indication of how many properties you might be able to purchase over the next 10 years, do actually send us a text because if I get enough texts, I'll actually do it. Now, some other assumptions here is some assumptions that level of household income is going to grow by 3% per year. I think that's probably a bit on the conservative side, but hey, it's not that material. They're talking about you're currently owning a 900K house with a 540K mortgage. So that's a 60% LVR on your own home, which I think is actually, depending on how old you are listening to this and how long you've been in the market, that might actually be, again, a bit on the conservative side. Pretty normal gross yield, 4% is what they're assuming you'd be able to purchase these properties at. And the key one that I feel a bit vindicated is my word of
very
this recording
excited
section.
About this part.
Is that they're predicting 5% rental income growth, or that's what they're using. The model is based on rents increasing by 5% per year, every year. And the reason I feel a bit vindicated by that is my numbers are a bit more conservative than that in my modelling. And some people think it's a bit on the aggressive side. So I feel quite good that the Reserve Bank is using it
by
even.
By some people, you mean me, don't you, Ed?
Yes, Andrew, but that's why you don't have economist after your name. So basically what I'm saying is I like all of the assumptions. The main one that's going to differ for people listening to the show is, of course, the household income one. But even so, with that level of household income, I think six is probably, you know,
a good number.
A bit higher than what I was expecting. Now, Andrew, let's take us through a different scenario, though.
Yep.
And let's say that somebody listening to the show has been investing for a while, they own their own home, and they've got three rental properties already. How many properties might they be able to buy over the next 10 years?
So again, assuming that low house price growth of 5% per year, based on interest rate floors of 7%, at the five-year mark, you'll be able to get five, maybe six properties, so two or three more. And at the 10-year mark, seven, maybe eight, i.e. four or five more than today.
That's quite good, eh?
Still very good. Again, with the debt-to-income ratios, that five-year mark, you're only getting one more. At the 10-year mark, potentially two more, getting you to five in total. But again, five's not bad, and you can always buy properties which are exempt.
That actually brings me to a very good point, Andrew, which is after running these numbers, I realised that this would actually give you a sense of the new versus existing debate, I guess. Do I invest in new builds or do I invest in existing? Now, this only works on the assumption that you are not cash flow hacking these properties, that you are not significantly increasing their income, which will help you continue to invest even as the debt to income ratios come in, if they come in as we expect they are, which again, listen back to the debt to income ratio episode we just did, which went through the Reserve Bank's consultation paper to get a sense of where their heads are at. So let's go through the kind of how many properties could I buy if it was new, if I bought new build properties versus existing. Well, this really starts to make a difference because in that 5% house price growth per year, if you currently just own your own home, you're potentially over those 10 years purchasing 5 to 6 new build investment properties. If you mirror that situation talked about in the assumptions, of course, if you're lower income, it'll be a little bit less. If you're higher income, it'll be a little bit more. But what's interesting is that if you then bought existing properties, you'd only get to 3. So you're potentially purchasing 2 or 3 more properties if investing in new builds compared to if you were investing in existing properties, again, with the same provisos already given. If we looked at that medium portfolio, so saying you already owned 3 rental properties already and you want to increase that, again, same scenario, you're potentially purchasing 2 to 3 more properties if purchasing new builds and 2 in existing. So you're looking at kind of 0 to 1 more if you're investing in new builds. If you've already got that portfolio, it might not make much of a difference to your borrowing. So I quite like this modelling because it gives you a sense, like I know you're probably not matching up exactly with those assumptions, but it gives you a sense of what's still possible at today's prices and under today's restrictions, again with the proviso that we've got exempt properties versus ones under a 7x debt to income ratio. Now again, I'm actually quite serious about, if you want a spreadsheet, I will attempt to reverse engineer the Reserve Bank's modelling, but just text me to let me know that wouldn't be a complete waste of time. You actually would find that interesting. And of course, if you want to learn more about property with Andrew and I, come along to our upcoming webinar. That is happening on the Tuesday, 8th of February at 7 p.m. And we're going to be talking all about new builds. If you want to invest in new builds, how do you find the right developer? How do you find the right property? And what are the important terms or clauses that you're going to need to have in that contract to protect yourself so that you're not hit by some of those tough sunset clauses? If you want to come along to that, tap or swipe over the cover up. There'll be a link in the show notes or just go to opuspartners.co.nz. You'll be able to sign up there. Listening to the Property Academy podcast. I'm your host, Ed McKnight.
I'm Andrew Nicholl.
And we're going to be back again to tomorrow with even more daily strategies, tactics, and insights to help you get the most out of the New Zealand property market. Until next time.